feel all right now.
Hey, I feel all right now.
Do you feel like I do right now?
Do you feel like I do right now?
Motivated.
Motivated.
Sky high.
Sky high.
Rock steady.
Rock steady.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I can do it.
I can do it.
You can do it.
You can do it.
Hey, yeah, yeah.
Welcome to the Airsoft Milsim Tactical Training Podcast, anytime, anywhere.
Welcome to 2015, folks, with another installment of the Airsoft Milsim Tactical Training Podcast. In this podcast, we're going to talk about patrolling. Patrolling is a fundamental skill that most Milsimmers have in some way, shape, or form, but it's not refined. It's one of those things that they do it, but they don't realize they're doing it. So what is patrolling? Well, the basic concept behind the patrols are a mission to gather information or to conduct combat operations. There's typically three kinds of patrols. You have reconnaissance, combat, and tracking. Now, tracking, we're not really going to go into because of the simple aspect of most airsoft games are very linear in their aspect of the terrain that you're allowed to use. So you have boundary limits on each side, front and back, and you go from point A to point B straight up and down the field. Very rarely do you have the opportunity to go from point A to point B and not in a straight line, or have to find an enemy target, or track down an enemy unit. So that's where we're not going to really discuss tracking. But on the aspect of patrols, There's certain key elements that you need to any patrol. And this is one thing that a lot of times it adds a lot of depth into your Milsim events as well as your training. I mean, key factor, one of the first is your headquarters element. The headquarters consists of the platoon leader, your radio operator, your forward observers if you have any, platoon sergeants. It may consist of any attachments that the platoon leader decides that he or the platoon sergeant may control directly. Then you have your aid and litter team. Now, Airsoft doesn't really do a whole lot with aid and litter teams, or litters, period, because, you know, respawn is on your own. You get shot, you're done, you go back to respawn. Enemy prisoner of war teams. Again, some places I've seen these happen. A lot of times, you don't have the necessity to use these, so we're just going to breeze over those. Surveillance teams. Now, these are interesting. The surveillance team keeps watch on an objective from the time that the leader's reconnaissance ends until the unit deploys for action on the objective. Then they join their elements. Essentially, these are guys that you do your leader's recon, you go up, you're almost at the objective, you get eyes on, and then you set these guys into place, and they report any information that's changed from the time you've looked at it to the time you do your assault or you do your ambush or whatever you're going to do. Basically, it's like leaving a set of eyes behind you so that if the enemy decides to reinforce a position, you're not going in blind. In-route recorder. The in-route recorder records all information collected during the mission. Basically, think of them as a scribe, or, you know, a secretary. These individuals, as information comes up, as actions on the objective happen, these individuals are recording this. You know, they're keeping it in their mind, and then they write it all down so that you, when you do your after-action review, you do your briefings, you have that information. Because a lot of times, as things are happening, you can forget little key factors, and that's what these guys are around for. Compass man. The compass man assists in navigating by ensuring the lead fire team leader remains on course at all times. Instructions to the compass man include an initial azimuth with subsequent azimuths provided as necessary. Compass man should present his or her compass on the initial azimuth before moving out, especially if the move will be during limited visibility conditions. Compass man is probably one of the most important positions if you're making long movements where you have to use a compass to move from point A to point B. They need to know their land nav and they need to be good at it. Your pace man. Pace man maintains an accurate pace at all times. The platoon or squad leader should designate how often the pace man is to report the pace to him or her. The pace man should also report the pace at the end of each leg. The leader should also designate an alternate pace man. Now, what it means by pace man is that a pace man is somebody, they're counting the steps it takes to reach a meter, 1,000 meters, 1 kilometer. So if you know that 65 paces equals 100 meters or whatever your pace count is, That's what they're doing, and that's counting the distance. So when you plan out your patrol route, you know, you look at the map and you go, okay, we're going to have to move 5 clicks. That's 5,000 meters. So your pace man's going to take their pace count and apply that so they know that they have to step so many steps to reach that 5,000 meters. And it's just so to make sure you're not overshooting an objective or getting lost or things of that nature. They're a very important part of that. Now, with inside of that whole aspect, you have, that's your core elements of a patrol. And then on combat patrols, which are the most common for any airsoft patrol or any airsoft event, milsim, whatever, is you're typically moving to contact, you're looking to get into a fight, so you're going to do a combat patrol. Then you have other elements inside of that patrol that you should consider. Your assault element. The assault element seizes and secures the objective and protects special teams as they complete their assigned action on the objective. Security element. The security element provides security at danger areas, secures the ORP, objective rally point, isolates the objective, supports the withdrawal of the rest of the platoon once it completes its assigned action on the objective. The security element may have separate security teams, each with assigned task or sequence. And this is something that very rarely do you see actually applied, is a security element. I mean, really quick, these guys allow the assault element to do their job without worrying about follow-on forces coming in behind them. Support element. The support element provides direct fire support and may control indirect fires from the for the platoon. So your support element is your fire by support, your base of fire. These are the guys with the heavy weapons, you know, the squad automatic weapons. They're the ones putting down fire as the assault element moves in. They're also your forward observers. They have the potential of culling in artillery strikes, hitting objectives with artillery or mortars or indirect weapon systems. Breach element. The breach element breaches the enemy's obstacles when required. Breach element is not the guys that breach the door when they go into a close quarters combat situation. Breach element is if you come across a wire, you know, a fencing, a barbed wire fencing, and you have to go through that fence, these guys come up, cut a hole, and allow the assault element to go through. When you get to your, you get to the building objective, if you're going to a building and the door is secured, they're the ones that come up and use a breach charge to blow it open and let the assault element get inside. Demolitions team. The demolitions team are responsible for preparing and exploding the charges to destroy equipment, vehicles, or facilities on the objective. They make things go boom. Now, one of the key factors is not get confused the demolition team with the breach team. They're two different aspects. Demolitions team are there to destroy equipment, to destroy buildings. They carry heavy charges. Breach teams carry breach charges. You know, smaller charges that are used to blow doors, windows, things of that nature. Search team. The assault team may comprise two-man buddy teams or four-man fire teams. Search teams search bunkers, buildings, and tunnels on the objective. These teams may search the objective or kill zone for casualty documents or equipment. Now, this is kind of an interesting aspect to apply, because a lot of times this is breezed over, and the assault element becomes the search element, and the whole attack bogs down. Because what you had was assault teams going in, hitting hard and pushing, and then they start gathering intel and start running it back to the team leader or whatever, and your assault's broke. You don't have any forward momentum. That's where search teams are so important. It can be two guys designated. Two gals, two guys, it doesn't matter, designated. They go in after the assault element has secured the area, after the security teams are in place and they're holding the buildings. The search teams go in and they start doing a systematic search, starting from the left-hand side, right-hand side, and they go through every room, every building, every casualty, pulling intel as fast and as quickly as possible, but as efficient as possible, and grabbing everything they can, and they hold it on themselves. Because they are the most secure of anybody at that point in time if you've put all these elements into play. If you've got your assault element pushing forward, you've got your security elements moving, then you apply your support elements, and then you have your search elements. You have a cohesive organization that's going to be able to hit objectives, do what they need to do, in and out, and go. And everybody knows their job. So with all this applied, how do you go about doing this? Well, the simple aspect is that almost every milsim game that you're going to play, you're going to be in some shape or fashion of a team. And you're going to have anywhere from 4 to 8 guys, sometimes 12. And when you're applied to it, and you're going to be assigned to a squad. Well, as a squad leader, the squad leader should ultimately be assigning roles within the squad. And that's where they should be breaking this down. You are going to be my assault element. The squad leader is automatically going to be the squad leader's the headquarters element. He's the one in charge of that squad. Then you need to break down and assign a fire team as an assault element. Okay, 4 guys, 5 guys, whatever the case is, that's my assault element. They are the ones that are going to be assaulting the objective. Next fire team, so we have 4 here, we have another 4, that's 8. The next 4 is the support element. This is the base of fire. These guys are going to be laying down fire. Then you're going to take, and if you have another 4, you're going to take those 4 and you're going to break them up into 2 aspects. Security and search. 2-man search team, 2-man security team. And the security team can actually move with the search team. They don't have to stay stationary because their goal is to provide security for that search team. So they're not focusing on worrying about people sneaking up on them. They have security. Or if you have a traditional squad where you have 4 fire teams, you have your first fire team's assault, second fire team's support, third fire team's security, fourth fire team is search. You can break it down in that manner. You break them down and that's their roles. They know what they need to do. Now, when you've done an objective, you've gotten into a building, you've hit it, you reconsolidate, that means everybody gets together. Then what you can do is you can rotate. So first fire team now becomes the security fire team, giving them some time to recoup, rest, reload, etc. Second fire team becomes the search element. That gives them some time to recoup and rest because they've been on the support by fire, so they need to reload. And then your third and fourth fire teams, which were security and search, now become assault and support. And it just rotates that way. So you're resting everybody. They're all getting a piece of the action. So that's just the fundamental basics of operating on a patrol and within a patrol. Now, patrolling also means moving to an objective or moving from point A to point B. And this is where a lot of times people get confused and I think it gets a little muddled. Because when you're on a patrol, patrolling is not something that's done fast. It's not something where you're sprinting from point A to point B or you're running. It's conducted in a slow, meticulous manner because you're typically moving into hostile territory. You're moving to contact. You know there's bad guys in front of you. You need to deal with them. You don't want to overlook something. So this is where formations come into play. This is where your spacing comes into play. This is where having a point element or a point man, having flanking security, all of these aspects apply. So let's look at formations right off the bat. Standard patrols are typically conducted in a column formation, a staggered column formation. Basically meaning you've got dispersion to your left and your right, your front and your back, and it's a column. You're moving forward. Now, I've heard other places, other teams talking about wedge formations and echelons and other different types of formations. Me, I prefer the column formation. Just for the simple aspect, it's the most easily controlled, and you can maneuver within that column formation so quickly, and you have security almost 360 degrees around you. So basically, you have your point man out, and the point man starts out. They step off. They get about 50 feet in front of everybody else, and then the next person steps off, and they are on their right-hand side, about 50 feet back, staggered. Give it about 50 feet, and then the next person steps off, and they are on their left-hand side. And you just keep doing that until your whole team is moving forward, you know, your whole squad's moving forward, and they're staggered, left, right, about 50 feet spacing between each other. Now, why 50 feet? And this is something I actually picked up from Major Bucarelli from Black Sheep. It's something I always knew, but I didn't really think about. And I like the aspect of how he explained this, because it's one of those inherent things that you get trained about and you understand the concept of, but it's never very voiced, is your max effective range of any typical airsoft rifle is about 100 to 150 feet. And you want to have coverage between you and the person beside you, overlapping fields of fire. So your weapon can cover them, their weapon can cover you, but you're not creating, you know, danger for grenades or friendly fire. So 50 feet is about the max distance you want to be away from each other. That splits that max effective range in half. So now you have two rifles with the ability to engage a target rather than just one. So that's why you have that 50 feet. It also gives you dispersion for grenades. A lot of times I've seen patrols go out and they're so bunched up that literally one Thunderbee grenade or tornado grenade in the middle of them would take everybody out in that area. So keep that dispersion, keep about 50 feet. Now, understand, terrain is going to dictate how much dispersion you can have. If you're moving through heavily dense terrain, I'm talking thick underbrush, thick trees, you're not going to get as much dispersion, and you're not going to be able to do a column maneuver. That's where you need to look at the terrain you're utilizing before you go on the patrol to decide your formation. I typically follow the rule of, if I can't go in a column, I go in a single file. If I can't go in a single file, then we really shouldn't be moving through that area. So you have your column formation. You stepped out. Now, as you're moving, your point man is focusing forward. Typically, the next man behind or the next woman, doesn't matter what you got going on here. Sorry, I'm just used to point man, things of that nature. As the next person behind is going to be your compass man, and then your pace counter, and so on and so forth, as it's broken down. As you're moving forward, everybody should be looking to your flanks, to your forward, and then every 15 to 20 steps, you turn around and make sure the person behind you is still behind you. You always keep visual contact with everybody. So that way, nobody can get snatched up by a quick ambush team, or somebody gets lost as you're moving through some rough terrain, you get spread out. You always have that spacing, and you take your time. This is not a rush. You are not running. You are not sprinting. You're taking your time because you've got the terrain to consider. You've got potential enemy combatants to consider, and you've got to get your team there as a cohesive unit. It does no good to take off and leave half your group behind. All your firepower is in this patrol. So every 15 to 20 steps, just quick turn, look behind you, make sure, get a visual confirmation that you have the person on your side is behind you, and then look across the other side, see that your flanking side's there, and keep moving. That's just simple, basic patrol operations in and of itself. Now, you keep continuing moving on to your objective. You're moving through the terrain, everything's moving along smooth and fine, you've got everything covered, and then you come into contact. Simple. Get online. That's where you start running. Everybody gets online and engage the enemy. Simple, easy, pretty quick and down and dirty. But the question is, what happens when, how do you get your people online when you come into contact? You know, what's the signal? What do you do? Well, and this applies on all aspects of using command and control inside of patrols. Hand and arm signals are typically your standard on a patrol, especially if you're moving quietly. So as soon as somebody passes a hand and arm signal, that hand and arm signal should be passed by everybody in the patrol. So that means if it starts by the squad leader in the middle of the formation, everybody else should be mimicking that hand and arm signal so everybody sees it and the squad leader confirm everybody understands it. The same aspect as a verbal command. So if they say contact left 300 feet infantry, everybody should be repeating contact left 300 feet infantry. And immediately everybody knows to get online facing to the left, you've got infantry coming in at 300 feet. Direction, distance, description. Those are great little key things right there. Direction, distance, description. But when it comes to the commands, everybody repeats it. That way, everybody knows what's going on. Everybody has an inkling of what they need to be doing from that point on. you know, whether it's react to contact, react to ambush, set up an ambush, react to indirect fire, etc. Now, if you're moving on a road and you have a vehicle that's coming from the front or rear, command is called out, vehicle from the rear, vehicle from the front, and if it's in a non-tactical situation where it's, you know, it's not a, you're in friendly line still, it's not a bad guy, you just spread out to the sides of the road, you can continue to move and allow the vehicle to go through the middle of the formation. But if it's in a tactical situation, you're going to get off the road, get under cover. Either set up for an ambush, or you're going to let the vehicle pass so you can observe it. Whatever the squad leader at that time dictates. Now, typically, when a vehicle comes through, you're going to split the squads and squad in half, one side of the road, one side the other side of the road. But if you're going to do a quick, hasty ambush, you're going to actually want to push everybody to the left or the right-hand side of the road, get as much cover as possible, and prepare to engage that vehicle. This is where your hasty ambushes come into a play. This is typically the quickest way to do a hasty ambush. You're moving, and you have enemy combatants coming at you, or they're coming from behind you. You shift off to the left or the right, set up your hasty ambush, and you go to town. Pretty simple and effective. And that is the key fundamentals of patrolling. I mean, in and of itself, all of those aspects are, if you wrap all of them up and put them into place, they work. They're going to allow you to get the max amount of troops to your objective in the least amount of time with the least amount of worry about losing people or having people fatigued to the point they can't assault the objective or maintain an assault on an objective or even maintain a defense of an area. And that's combat patrols. So then you have reconnaissance patrols, and that's moving to recon an area. And one of the key things, and I'm not going to go over into it too much in depth, that one of the key things about a reconnaissance patrol is it's not Hollywood. It's not you're constantly sneaking around. You can move in a standard patrol on a reconnaissance patrol as long as you're doing your spacing, your dispersion, you're keeping quiet, you're using your field craft of not stepping on twigs every 5 steps. You know, staying within cover and concealment as much as possible, but you don't have to be crouched down and trying to do Sneaky Sam the whole way. Once you get to your objective rally point, and that's what we're going to talk about next, is rally points. But once you get to your objective rally point, that's when you start getting into the mode of sneaking into the objective to get an eyes on doing your reconnaissance. So let's talk about rally points. The leader considers the use and location of rally points. Rally point is a place designated by the leader where the platoons move to reassemble and reorganize if it becomes dispersed. Now, rally points are really something that I very rarely have ever seen used outside of a few games. Essentially, what a rally point is it's like a respawn point, but you don't respawn there. What happens is if you get separated from your element or your squad, your platoon, whatever the case is, you go to the rally point. That's where you reorganize at. So in Airsoft, a good way to translate to Airsoft is rally points should really honestly be used more by squad leaders, side commanders, especially when they're moving to objectives, because of the simple aspect is you get a guy who gets hit, he bleeds out, he has to go back to this respawn. Rather than rushing back in and trying to link back up with his squad or his platoon, he moves from the spawn point, to the objective rally point. At the objective rally point, he finds, oh, there's 4 other guys here. There's enough for a fire team. Now we can move back into the objective as a group rather than trying to do singularly, just bleeding back into an area, trying to link back up with my squad or my element. Rally points give you really good and easy control of your patrol and your operations so that you know you have some place to fall back to, reorganize if you have to, or you have people coming in to meet up at. And the simple way to, you know, you can, simple and easiest way is to mark on your maps rally points that you're going to be utilizing. But as a squad leader on the move, you just give the hand and arm signal of a rally point. And that's basically just point at the ground and circle it, make a circle with your hand. That's arm, hand, and arm signal for a rally point. So, and you have different types of rally points. You have your initial rally point. An initial rally point is a place inside of friendly lines where a unit may assemble and reorganize if it makes enemy contact during the departure of friendly lines or before reaching the first in route rally point. initial rally point is literally your spawn point. That is your initial rally point. In-route rally points. The leader designates an in-route rally points every 100 to 400, and here it says meters. You can do feet based on the terrain, vegetation, and visibility. When the leader designates a new in-route rally point, the previously designated one goes into effect. This precludes uncertainty over which one troops should move to if contact is made immediately after the leader designates a new rally point. There are three ways to designate a rally point. Physically occupy them for a short period. This is the preferred method. Pass by it at a distance and designate using arm and hand signals. Walk through and designate using arm and hand signals. So what that basically means is, you're moving along and you want to establish a rally point. So you stop and you have a tactical halt. Gather everybody up and designate, this is our rally point. Everybody can see where it's at, and typically you want to use some type of terrain feature or, you know, something in the terrain that's going to give you a good indicator of what it is. You don't just want to find an open field in the middle of it and say, okay, we're going to rally in the middle of this field. I like to a lot of times find an odd tree or something that's just going to give a visual indicator to the rest of the squad that, okay, I know that's the rally point. Once you've got the rally point marked, you move on. Now, after you've gone about 100 to 400 meters or so, and you get, and that's about, you can translate that to yards. So about 100 yards to 400 yards translates roughly to about the same in meters. So if you have 100 meters, you have 100 yards, which is one football field. So 400 meters, 400 yards, four football fields. So every 400 or so, you stop and you designate a new rally point. Now the thing is that new rally point is in effect, but if you come into contact less than 100 yards in front of that rally point, you don't want to utilize the rally point you just marked. You're going to utilize the previous one because that gives you some spacing, gives you some distance, allows you to get some cover and concealment, and that's how that applies and that's how that works. So then you have the objective rally point. The objective rally point is a point of out of sight, sound, and small arms range of the objective. It's normally located in the direction that the platoon plans to move after completing its action on the objective. The ORP is tentative until the objective is pinpointed. Actions at or from the ORP include reconnaissance of the objective, issuing your fragos, disseminating information from reconnaissance if contact was not made, making final preparations before continuing operations, for example, recamouflaging, preparing demolitions, lining up rucksacks for quick recovery, preparing for enemy prisoner of war bindings, first aid kits and litters, and inspecting weapons, accounting for soldiers and equipment, for actions at the objective are complete, reestablish chain of command after actions at the objective are complete. So basically, your objective rally point is where you pause and make sure everything's good to go and you didn't, you know, lose any gear. You drop those rucksacks that you've been carrying on the patrol. You stage any gear that you don't want to carry into the assault. And then you conduct your assault from that location. You typically want to leave some type of security at your objective rally point because once you hit your objective, that's where you're going to fall back to grab your gear and move out. So it's a potential hazard for your squad or your fire team or your platoon because you've got gear laying there, and if the enemy comes upon that gear, they're going to be like, oh, if they're smart, they're like, oh, I can set up a hasty ambush because I know they're going to be coming back here to get this gear. So you want to leave some type of security on that aspect, and you want to make sure it's got enough defensive positions, you know, cover and concealment that, you know, somebody just meandering by is not going to step over something and go, oh, look, what's this stuff? Free gear. Now, you've got all that in play. You've done your patrol. You've hit your objective. You set up your objective rally point. You hit your objective. Things went off without a hitch. You regroup. You go back to your objective rally point, gather up your gear, pick up your security elements, and you're on your move back to friendly lines. You get back to friendly lines, and you decide to do a debriefing. And this is part of one of the key components of patrolling, is doing the debriefing. Immediately after the platoon or squad returns, personnel from higher headquarters conduct a thorough debrief. And that's typically your side commander. They want to know what happened out there. You don't worry about radios broadcasting what's going on out there because you never know who's listening. You never know if you have the distance to pick up your radio signals strongly. That's one thing that I'm guilty of, and I know a lot of our, is relying on radios to broadcast information. large amounts of information because you can very rarely get teams to come back and brief you. So you want to try to avoid that because it's not as effective as an in-face debriefing. Plus, it allows your squads and your platoons to come back, regroup, get a breather, get some food, get some water, get some chow. So the briefing may include all members of the platoon or their leaders, radio operators, any attached personnel. Normally, the debriefing is oral. Sometimes a written report is required. Information on the report should include, and this is oral as well, is when you're briefing somebody, size and composition of the platoon conducting the patrol. Well, how many people did you have? How big was it? What was your mission of your patrol? Was it a location, the type of the patrol? What was the location? What was the purpose? Departure and return times. Well, you stepped off at 8, you returned at 10. Routes. What routes did you use? What checkpoints? What grid coordinates? All of that's important because basically what you're establishing is locations of enemy forces. If you went on a specific route and you hit nonstop enemy forces, that means there's a heavy presence in that area that needs to be paying attention to. Detailed description of the terrain and the enemy positions that were identified. I mean, as you're moving along and you find that the terrain was tough in this area and you hadn't seen it before, or the enemy's positions that were identified that we didn't know about, you want to have those identified and so we can pass that on. So the next follow-on patrol, they know what to deal with. Results of any contact with the enemy. We hit the enemy and we pushed through. We destroyed them. Or we hit the enemy and they fell back. Or we hit the enemy and we had to fall back and find an alternate route. Personnel status at the conclusion of the patrol mission, including disposition of casualties. How many people did you lose? How many people made it through? Things of that nature. Conclusions or recommendations. Simple aspect. Conclusion. We hit the objective. We were successful at the objective when we moved back. Recommendations. You always want to give recommendations. Well, I would prefer, you know, my recommendation is not use this route. Let's try this route. You know, not recommendation. You sent one squad to do a platoon's job. Or you sent a platoon to do one squad's job. Things like that. It's constructive criticism. It helps the side commanders do their job better. It helps the follow-on squads do their jobs better. And that's, in and of itself, patrolling. All those aspects apply. You go out there, get outside friendly lines, and you take it to the opposition forces. Using all of those steps and all of those little tricks that have just been provided, all that information. And what this allows you to do is if you apply patrolling to your MILSIM activities in your training, and you go to an event where they actually give you the opportunity to patrol, and I mean there's a few there. Most are very objective oriented where it's get from point A to point B and you run, or you ride in a vehicle until you get to the objective. Or you're deployed in an area where you're already in the objective, you don't need to patrol to it. But there are some that you actually have to patrol. And when you're doing that patrol, applying those aspects of keeping that 50 meters dispersion, you know, keeping your 360 degrees, staying in that column formation, or going to a single file, a ranger file, as it's commonly recalled, or commonly referred to, will keep you moving. It adds an incredible amount of MILSIM opportunity for engagements and a lot of fun. And it's just going to up your game and make you guys and make everybody in that aspect that practices this. But it's also going to step up your skills. So, folks, again, welcome to the 2015 year. I'm still disappointed there's no hoverboards. I will be doing I'll give you a little heads up here. Some news and information. I'm going to be doing a review over the Tippmann Arms carbine. I actually got one. I have loved Tippmann for as long as I've been doing these type of events and activities. Now that they're branching out into airsoft, because as many of you know, I started in paintball. The weapon of choice for paintball for me was the Tippmann 98, and then I graduated to the Tippmann A5. I carried both for years, and I used, abused, and loved those weapon systems. Now that Tippmann's broken into the airsoft, I've picked one up. I'm going to use and abuse it as much as possible. Other news, BB's Not Bullies, the patches are available. They're on the store. It's $10. snag one up, and I'll get it in the mail to you. I mean, they have gone international. I just sent one out to Sweden yesterday. So, huge thanks to Dennis. If you're listening, Dennis, that was pretty awesome on my side of the deal here, sending a patch to Sweden. I'd love to see them out there. I'd love to see pictures of you guys wearing them in the field. So, as soon as you have one, slap it on your gear, get out there, apply it, you know, apply these techniques that you're learning, and send me some pictures. Let me know how things are going. Let me know how that program is affecting you as a whole on the field and others. Get the word out there. BBs not bullies. It really is awesome for me to hear your guys' stories. And there's tons of them that are coming in. So with that, I'm going to wrap this up. This one went a little longer than expected, but that's all right. It was a lot of good information. Welcome again. New year. We're going to keep on chugging. A few things coming up. I'm going to try to hit some events this year. I'll let you know as they come about. The planning process is in effect. So with that, be safe, be honorable, keep slinging those BBs, and I will see you on the field.
Remember the four rules of gun safety. Always treat your gun as if it were loaded. Keep your fingers straight and off the trigger until you intend to fire. Do not point your airsoft gun at anything you do not intend to shoot. Know your target and what's behind it. Always wear full C-LAP protection, rated to ANSI Z81.7 standards. Keep your airsoft guns in a case or bag until you are on the field. Only conduct your airsoft activities on approved fields, or on private land with owner's written consent, or public lands with consent of local law enforcement. The Airsoft Milsim Tactical Training Podcast is not liable for any criminal action, injury, harm or damage caused by any person or persons utilizing the information presented. Be safe, be honorable and have fun. Questions or comments, find us on Facebook under Airsoft Milsim Tactical Training Podcast.